Congratulations, you. You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast. Yes, you are.
You're tuned in to the R1 News, your stop for news and current affairs on the airwaves. 11 to 12 weekdays here on Radio 191 FM. Te reo irirangi kotahi.
Tēnā koutou I tēnei āta. Kei te whakarunga mai koe ki te reo irirangi kotahi. Ko Zach toku ingoa.
Ko Miria toku ingoa.
And you're listening to the R1 News Show for Ramere, Te Rima o Here Turi Koka on Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
Coming up on the program I tēnei rā, we'll be talking to Trent Smith from the University of Otago's Department of Economics for our weekly segment Business as Usual, where we're going to be looking at global recessions. Following that, we've got an interview with Associate Professor Brian Roper about the Otago Politics School Day, which is set to launch next Wednesday. After that, we'll be speaking with University of Otago Head of Public Health Professor Louise Signal about new research which examines poverty from a child's perspective. And lastly on the show, we have Daniel Cummings from Tartan Sari joining us for our weekly segment, Off to Market.
Very shortly, we have news and headlines. News and headlines? We have news, headlines and weather with Dave Borre. But first, here's Rick Astley with Never Gonna Give You Up. You're listening to the R1 News on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Puritia kia raka.
Do it.
Kia ora koutou katoa. That was none other than Rick Astley with Never Gonna Give You Up. What a classic hit. It is 11:09 on the Ramire R1 News. Now we have Mr. Dave Borry with headlines and weather.
The R1 News headlines.
Sorry. Yesterday. Sorry, I'm just looking at the wrong bit of
information.
Bit of information. Thank you. Sorry about that, everyone. Yesterday, the Ministry of Health reported that there were 6,152 new cases of COVID-19 and 49 COVID-related deaths. There are currently 663 people hospitalised due to the virus, with 14 in the ICU. The virus seems to be slowing down, with case rate down 18% from last week. Public Health Agency's Deputy Director General, Dr. Andrew Old, reports that 233,000 new people will be added to the national HSU dataset, which is based on people using health services over a 12-month period in 2021. Once this dataset is updated, the overall double vaccination rate from over 12s drops from 95 to 90%, and Māori double vaccination rates drop from 88 to 83%. Despite these reported drops, the actual number of people vaccinated has not been affected. In a series of new military drills, China has launched a volley of missiles near Taiwan. The East Asian superpower fired 11 ballistic missiles into waters around Taiwan's northeast and southwest coasts. These drills follow the visit of senior US politician Nancy Pelosi to Taiwan on Wednesday, who is the most senior US politician to visit the island in 25 years. The United States does not officially recognize Taiwan as an independent country. However, China viewed the visit as a challenge to its claims of sovereignty over Taiwan. Taiwan's defense ministry said it has activated its defense systems and was monitoring the situation. Japan has called for an immediate stop to the Chinese missile launches, as 5 Chinese missiles landed in its waters as well. Head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, says Ukraine's largest nuclear plant is out of control. The Argentinian diplomat warned that the Zaporizhia plant is in need of inspection and repairs, which has only worsened as the plant is located in a war zone. Russia captured the plant in March and continues to use it, with the plant's Ukrainian staff now working under Russian control. Russian officials say the plant is ready for an inspection from the International Atomic Energy Agency, but Ukraine's state nuclear company warns that any visit to the plant while it's under Russian control legitimizes Russia's presence. Grossi warned that every principle of nuclear safety has been violated and asked for cooperation from both sides to allow for an inspection and reduce the risk of any nuclear disaster.
Now it's time for the weather.
The R1 News weather.
I tēnei rā, Otipoti can expect some high cloud and strong northerlies, with a high of Tekau Mā Ono, 16, and a low of Tekau, 10. Tomorrow, on Rā Hori, Saturday, we've got some scattered rain or showers which will clear later in the day. Don't worry about the cold too much, as we've got a high of Tekau Mā Rima, 15, and a low of Rima, 5. These have been your R1 News and weather updates.
That was the R1 News headlines. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram, and tune in to R1 News at 11 a.m. on weekdays.
Kia ora, Dave, for those fantastic news and weather updates. It is currently 11:13 here on the R1 News program. Up next, we have Trent Smith from the University of Otago Department of Economics coming through to talk about the possibility of a global recession. But first, we have to play a song. Here's The Breeders with Cannonball. You're listening to Radio 1, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi, Puritia Kia Raka.
That was Cannonball by The Breeders. You are listening to R1 News here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. It is 11:17 a.m. and we are now joined by Trent Smith from the University of Otago Department of Economics for this week's installment of Business as Usual. Today, we're going to be going global as the U.S. economy has shrunk for the second quarter in a row, sparking the question of whether a recession is underway in the States and imminent for the rest of the world. Kia ora, Trent. How's it going?
Kia ora, Maria. I'm well, thanks.
So I guess we should start with the question, is the United States in recession?
So economists have kind of a technical definition of recession, right? It's two consecutive quarters of decrease in GDP. And of course, there's measurement issues, so you don't always know whether that's happened, right? It takes a while for the data to come in, and then even after it does, they often correct it later. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of a silly thing that people debate so enthusiastically whether we're in a recession based on this kind of arbitrary rule, right? So, there's a bit of a dip in the global economy, and it's related to inflation. And the answer to your question, of course, is I don't know. That's the proper answer an economist should give.
President Joe Biden has referred to the low unemployment rate of 3.6% as reassurance that the economy remains sound and stable. Is this indeed a relevant indicator of the stability of the U.S. economy, and do you think it's reassuring?
Oh, that's a great question. So we're kind of in this weird place now where we've got inflation globally. Every country pretty much has prices rising. And we could talk about the reason for that. But the typical response to this is for reserve banks in most Western countries react to inflation by tightening up the money supply, right, by raising interest rates. What they're often targeting when they do that is they're literally trying to cause people to become unemployed, right? That sort of they worry that if unemployment rates get too low, right? Like you might argue they are in the U.S. right now, if that's what you thought was causing the inflation, right? Then wages get driven up when unemployment is low. That's maybe good for workers, but it's potentially because wages are such a big part of the economy. And of course, wages are a price, just like what you pay for food is a price. It's a price to somebody. And so when wages go up, it causes the costs of many businesses, production to go up. So they quote, have to pass on the cost to their customers. And so we're actually in this weird place where it actually seems like the economy is doing reasonably well. Like low unemployment sounds like a great thing. But on the other hand, you've got these reserve banks sort of banging the drum about inflation, and so there are many governments, including the U.S., New Zealand to some extent too, are they're sort of starting to aggressively raise interest rates, right? Mm-hmm. And often their stated goal is we want to create unemployment, like they literally want to create a recession in order to address unemployment, which
seems paradoxical.
Well, it sounds outrageous when you say it that way, right? But I don't think the economists doing it would argue with that premise, that they're worried that that economies are overheating and they need to scale back on aggregate demand, they would say, by making the money supply tighter. So I happen not to like that strategy. I think there are much better ways to deal with inflations, and in particular, the current inflation has many causes, of course. But a big part of it is the global supply chains that got whacked by the pandemic, and they're still getting whacked by the pandemic with China still being closed. But there's also this interesting phenomenon where this is something economists learned back in 1999 when Europe introduced the euro. So all the countries that joined the euro back then, they were like switching their currency, right? So Germany switched from Deutschmarks to euro on a single day. And every country in Europe did it on the same day. And what happened and what shocked economists that nobody had predicted was that it caused a massive inflation.
Yeah.
Like every business in every country and every euro country saw this as an opportunity to raise their prices.
Oh.
Right? Yeah. And so it actually sort of generated a new price theory among economists that that whereby now we sort of acknowledge the fact that sellers often have a relationship with their buyer and they're reluctant to raise prices because, well, you know, their buyers might hold it against them or they might notice and then shop around for with the competitors. And so when there is an opportunity like that, right, the currency changes, there's this tendency, like it's like a valve gets released and everybody raises their prices. And that's part of what's happening today with inflation, right? Because every seller in the world can say, oh, supply chains, my costs have gone up. I have to raise my prices. And to the extent that that's true, that we've got prices sort of above the competitive level just because of this opportunism, it suggests that you actually don't need to cause a recession. We could just wait and let prices come back down on their own.
Right. So what are some of the other ways of tackling inflation that aren't causing a recession, as you put it?
Personally, I'd like to see, I like to see New Zealand or every country in the world really move more towards fiscal tools. So you could, instead of, tweaking the money supply by tweaking the interest rate, you could develop tools which allowed you to more finely adjust taxing and spending in a way that could help more directly deal with inflation.
Is this things like progressive taxing and the UBI or other sort of?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, so that's exactly what I mean. So, I mean, if you think about like no government ever talks about raising taxes during a recession, right? But honestly, if you raise taxes only on those who still have their jobs, right, or only on those who aren't being hurt much by the wealthy, who aren't hurt much by the recession,
living
that's exactly who should be paying to lift up the people who are suffering the most during a recession. Now, in the U.S., this gets talked about sometimes, and should we use fiscal tools more? In the U.S., the fallback reason why they don't do such a thing is that it's politically infeasible, right? The American political system could never, right, let this never make this happen. That's not so true in New Zealand, right? Our form of government is very different. Like we have, because of the way our the governing party in New Zealand has so much power, they don't have the checks and balances and two-party system in America, like America does, holding them back. Our system is sort of the ideal system to kind of try this. Mm. So our government just recently, right, so they just issued this cost of living payment, which has been kind of controversial because it was sort of sloppily targeted in a few cases. But that's exactly the kind of thing they should be doing. And the fact that it was sloppily targeted means they should probably, if they're going to be forward-thinking, they should set up a system that can do it more cleanly, right?
Well, kia ora, and thank you so much for coming on to talk about the recession and ideas of reducing inflation.
My pleasure.
That's good yarn. Alrighty, up next on the program, we have an interview with Brian Roper, Associate Professor Brian Roper from the Department of Politics, about the Otago Politics Day School that'll be coming on very shortly. It's 11:26 here on the R1 News program. Take care.
That was PHF, and you're listening to R1 News here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. We just heard from economist Trent Smith about the recession, or the question of a recession in the States, and it is currently 11:27 a.m.
There's an exciting new event for the politically minded among you that is coming to the University of Otago next week. Members of the university's politics department have organised a day school for politics next Wednesday, where multitudes of academics, political party representatives and activists are set to give presentations on political topics, hold panel discussions and, more broadly, foster political engagement with the attendees. I spoke with Associate Professor Brian Roper, Chief Organiser for the Otago Politics Day School, about what's on offer at the day school, why fostering political engagement with the public is important, and how the day school organisers ensure that a variety of political perspectives are represented. Here it is.
Of this Politics Open Day, and what do you hope to get out of it?
Well, for many years, the politics program has hosted the Otago Foreign Policy School, and I kind of thought it'd be really cool to run an event that did have some focus on international political economy, international relations, you know, those sorts of issues, but that also had a focus on, you know, the things that the other streams, you know, in politics at Otago focus on, like, you know, domestic politics, Māori politics, comparative politics, political ideas, and so forth. That was sort of one idea. In actual fact, it doesn't have a single aim because it's a multifaceted beast in some ways. So the morning is mainly but not exclusively focused on year 12 and year 13 secondary school students. So there's a secondary school students program that runs from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. The afternoon, especially from 1 p.m. through to 5 p.m., as you've probably seen, we're running four streams with multiple papers on a wide range of different topics. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of mainly aimed at university students, both undergraduate and postgraduate, plus interested members of the public if they want to turn up. And that's more just about kind of hosting, you know, a discussion of all things political. The idea being that it's not exclusively for, you know, the politics program, but we're hoping, because this is the first year that we run it, we're hoping that as it goes forward, other kindred disciplines will kind of come on board and that it'll actually grow quite a bit bigger than it is, you know, in the first year that we've offered it. So the idea is that it's not going to be sort of exclusively for, you know, politics students, staff, etc., but that it actually will over time become much broader than that. And, you know, will play a role in terms of discussion, debate, political education, consciousness raising, provide students with an opportunity to kind of present their work to a wider audience. And, you know, and then the evening plenary is more just community outreach, where the main aim is kind of beyond campus towards the general public. It has a range of different goals, I guess, rather than one single purpose.
Now, there are going to be multiple speakers talking on various topics such as the rise of China's geopolitical power and economic power, climate change, and the Ukrainian war. What presentations on political topics are you most excited to see happen?
One of the things I think is really exciting about the Otago Politics Day School is that we have multiple presentations looking at different facets of climate change, running through the morning, through the afternoon, and into the evening. And the evening plenary, obviously, is the kind of, you know, the day builds up to the evening plenary. And, I mean, that is actually really exciting because it's quite broad. You know, it's titled The World in Crisis. And we've got Lisa Ellis from Philosophy talking about climate change. We've got Christine Winter focused on Indigenous conceptions of intergenerational justice. We have Leon Goldsmith talking about the food crisis in the Middle East. Robert Patman talking about New Zealand's relationship to AUKUS. Philip Nell is talking about the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and the Russo-Ukraine war on global inequality. So that's from 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. in the Hutton Theatre in the museum, and that will be really cool. If people are interested, they're probably going to want to get there a little bit early because the Hutton has a limited capacity of, I think, a maximum of around 120. So it may kind of get filled, we hope that's a problem we have.
Now, a fair chunk of the topics in the day seem to be concerning left-wing or leftist political perspectives. How are you ensuring that a broad range of political perspectives are brought to the fore in this event?
There has been a concern expressed from the National Party that the National Party, you know, it wasn't featured sufficiently prominently enough throughout the program. And I actually responded to Eve McCullum from the Young Nats and said, firstly, National and ACT were built into the program right from the get-go in the parties and groups sessions. So we've got a session that runs for 2 hours where we've invited all of the political parties plus activist groups that, you know, have been based on the campus at Otago for quite some time, and in that sense have an organic kind of grounded base, at Otago. I'd like to see far more groups than we actually have this year, but I think that will kind of snowball and tend to grow going forward. So, you know, National and ACT were built into the program right from the get-go. We now have Michael Woodhouse, who's going to be talking from 1 to 2pm. And I also said to Eve that I'd be quite happy, particularly like, you know, when we run this thing again next year, to have a whole stream in the afternoon that could focus on the centre-right. And I'd be quite happy if she actually organised it. Yippee. So we want to be as broad and inclusive and inclusive as we can be, but we also want the program and the event itself to be very much student-driven and student-led. And the reality is that a very substantial majority of politics students tend to lean more to the centre-left than the centre-right. We have a substantial minority of centre-right supporters, but, for example, at various points I've run sort of mock elections just to sort of see, you know, what way, you know, our students would vote if there was an election. And in most years, over 70% of politics students have indicated that they would vote either Labour or Green. And certainly, I suspect once you look at our postgraduate students, a substantial minority that tend to be sort of leaning a bit more to the left than the right. So we're kind of going to get more critical left-leaning presentations for that reason, just reflecting the political leanings of a substantial majority of our students.
Aotearoa is experiencing thousands of COVID cases in what has been labelled as the second wave. What health safety measures are you putting in place to minimise the spread of COVID?
Masks, primarily, plus, you know, the usual, you know, making hand sanitizers available and so forth. I mean, I've actually been researching the political economy of COVID, so I'm trying very hard not to start to elaborate. I think that I'm critical from the left of the government's sort of abandonment of its elimination strategy and moving towards this idea that we're now having to live with the virus. Right. I mean, as Susie Wells and many other epidemiologists pointed out, this pandemic could have been killed at birth if we'd had the internationally synchronized implementation of effective elimination strategies from the get-go. But we had Donald Trump in the White House, we had Boris Johnson as the British Prime Minister, and, you know, we had business lobby groups clamouring to keep the wheels of industry turning and profits flowing, and even a short-term stalling of that process was viewed as being beyond the pale from their perspective. So there was no short-term pain effectively for long-term gain. There was in effect letting the genie out of the bottle, failing to adopt an implementation strategy and you know, fast forward to 2022 and where we are today. We're living with the virus, and so we will be following government guidelines, even if in my view those government guidelines are actually fundamentally flawed and far too lax.
Kia ora, that was Professor Brian Roper talking about the Otago Politics Day School coming up next week on Wednesday. It is 11:37 a.m. and up next on the program we're going to be talking with Louise Signal about some new research that reveals the the reality of child poverty from the perspective of children. But first, here is Saltwater Criminals with GSH. You're listening to R1 News on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. You're listening to R1 News here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. The University of Otago-led study published today in the New Zealand Medical Journal exposes the reality of child poverty from the perspective of children themselves. 168 12-year-olds were involved in the study, which saw them wearing automatic cameras for 4 days that took photos every 7 seconds to witness what the day-to-day life of a child in poverty was like. We are now joined by Head of Department of Public Health at the University of Otago, Wellington, Professor Louise Signal, to tell us more about the research, how it was undertaken, and what needs to be done to address the issue of child poverty in Aotearoa. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
So to start, poverty in Aotearoa affects more than 20% of children. How did the idea or concept behind the study of using cameras to track the lives of those living in poverty come about?
We know a lot about children from talking to adults. We don't really know a lot about what it's really like from a children's perspective. So we were really lucky to be funded to study the world in which children live. And we had very broad permission from the children and their parents to study any element of it. And we've done a number of studies. And this is a sort of compilation study where we've looked at a whole range of factors that these children encounter. And we've compared the images of the children who are the most privileged in our society with those who are the least privileged to try and understand what poverty actually looks like from that child's perspective.
So could you describe for us what the experience of a child in poverty is as seen in the study?
A child's experience is less healthy food, filling up on cheap junk food on the way to school, less books, less access to technology to do their homework, less balls to practice football in the backyard and play at the Commonwealth Games. Poor quality, broken and mouldy houses that are overcrowded. They have less personal space, less privacy, nowhere to do their homework. They've got less after-school care activities and less sports opportunities as well. So it really is a complicated picture of being impoverished in sort of every element of their lives.
Mm-hmm. What was one of the most shocking elements of this study that you found?
The most shocking to me is the comprehensive nature of how poverty impacts on these children. It's not just one thing. It's not just the money, but it's in what that can be used for in so many fundamental ways that mean that the children just cannot live a healthy life and develop and grow to their full potential. And that is just such a waste of human potential. It's such a travesty for our country, in my view. We you know, need to have a thriving society, and that's going to be built on the children of today.
What are the implications of the fact that poverty rates among Māori and Pacifica children are twice as high as New Zealand European children?
They're outrageous. And, I mean, child poverty itself is outrageous, and the way that it is patterned by ethnicity is absolutely outrageous. It's certainly a colonial inheritance of this country, and that is one of the key reason for Tamariki Māori to be so disadvantaged. And not only are there more Tamariki Māori living in disadvantage, but actually there are more of them living in severe poverty. 180,000 New Zealand children have the most extreme poverty. And in our study, we did see those differences, that even when we compared Māori Pacific and New Zealand European, those poor children, the Māori and Pacific children, were struggling even more to access what they needed.
And so what are the long-term implications for children experiencing life like those that was witnessed in this survey?
They're completely profound in every aspect of their lives. So physically, mentally, socially, in terms of their confidence, their self-esteem, their opportunity for employment, their opportunity to go to university. These are all things that are the travesty of child poverty.
So my last question for you this morning is on that note as well, that there have been some recent changes to things like housing and benefit levels for low-income earners. But what further policy solutions would you like to see to address the issue of child poverty in Aotearoa?
I do think that the current government has made some important steps to address child poverty, and I'm particularly pleased with the rental warrant of fitness, which has come in after the study. The housing hopefully is improving for future students and for our young children. But there has been some increase in benefit levels. But basically, this is a failure of adults across political parties and across our society as a whole to not prioritise the rights of our children for decades. We know that the mother of all budgets, which the national government brought in 1991, slashed benefit levels to a level that we have never recovered from. Children in the 1980s had much more money available to them than they do today. So we need a serious conversation. We need a reorientation of how we think about policy, and we should need policy and commitment in this country from the adults to focus on the children.
Thank you so much for coming on and talking with me about this today.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure.
That was Professor Louise Signal, Head of Department of Public Health at the University of Otago, Wellington, talking about a new piece of research into the lives of children living in poverty from their own perspectives. Up next, we are going to be joined by Tartan Sari for our segment of Off to Market to hear about what they're doing at the market tomorrow morning. But first, here is a song. This is Cult Blonde with Danger. It is 11:45 and you're listening to R1 News.
Thank you.
Kia ora koutou katoa, you're listening to the R1 News program for Ramere, Te Rima o Here Turi Koka. It is currently 11:49. That was, who was that, Amiria?
That was Danger by Colt Blonde.
Ah, classic tune. Before on the program we had an interview with Professor Louis Signal from the University of Otago, Department of Public Health, talking on poverty from a child's perspective and new research concerning that field. Right now it is off to market and we are joined by Daniel Cummings from Tartan Sari. Would you like, there we go, just get that microphone over there. Yeah. Kia ora, kia ora. So you're still Tartan Sari. It's kind of, is it a blend of... also, Scottish and is it Gowan?
Goan. Well, no,
yeah.
I'm the blend of Scottish.
You're the blend of
Goan. Yeah. So it's actually Goan. So my mum's from Goa. Mm-hmm. So they're all secret family recipes.
Oh, okay.
From Goa, they've been passed down, you know.
Yeah.
From generation to generation, and my parents ran this business in the UK, like the whole time I was growing up. So, you know, I'd earn my pocket money by deheading a box of chilies and things like that. So, when I first came to New Zealand, it wasn't really something I wanted to do, but then I started missing the flavours of home and it's like, can I have the recipes, Mum? And so got them all, started making them for friends, and everyone was like, whoa, you know, these are so tasty. So eventually, it's taken me many years, but I thought it would be good to carry on the family business and, see how it went. And it seems to be going pretty well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. So it sounds like it was quite a natural progression.
Yeah. I was making it a few years back and I was like, gosh, I really love doing this. Maybe I should, you know, do it properly. So, yeah.
Now, you mentioned that these are like family, you know, secret recipes.
Mm.
And I assume that, you know, what you can get over in England is much more... there's a lot more you can get over in England than what you can get here in terms of ingredients.
Totally.
So have you had to adapt many of those recipes for the New Zealand, like, I guess, the suppliers and whatnot?
I was really focused on, okay, well, how much sugar, how much oil is in it, you know, how can I make it a bit healthier? So I kind of adjusted the recipes a little bit. But also I just wanted to use local produce. So I think my parents had like 10 varieties of pickle. But I was like, well, it's really quite hard to get aubergines, eggplants. So I used zucchinis because they're everywhere in the summer. And actually that pickle just won a food producer award. So
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. So it was a good move to move to the zucchini. It just has a really nice texture. I only use what I can find in New Zealand, like fruit and vegetables. We have a prawn pickle, but... I'm still sussing up whether I want to make that one at the moment. But, so that's really important.
Speaking of the range of pickles that you offer, what's your personal favourite
one? Oh, tomato. And I think everyone who comes to the stall on a Saturday, I'm like, try the tomatoes. It's really good. It's really good. I probably should be a bit more, you know, promoting the other flavours. But, I eat it most days. It's really yum, really nice. Delicious.
And what would you say is like your top-selling pickle?
Yeah, probably the tomato.
Probably the tomato, and the goes hand in hand. Yeah.
Although the carrot does really well, that's our hottest one. So it's very yummy. It gives me hiccups. It's quite spicy.
I did a little research and looked into the profile of Tartan Sari on the Otago Farmers Market website.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that you use seasonal produce.
Yes.
Given that it's winter, what kind of wintry produce are you using?
Okay. Yeah, so I've just made about 500 bottles of lime and I had a few weeks off, and now coming up will be orange and lemon. So two are the milder ones. They're like a spicy marmalade. Really unusual flavour. So I'll be making about 500 jars of orange and lemon in the next few weeks. So that could be busy.
Sounds delicious.
It does sound delicious.
And I'm also I'm going to be releasing a new curry paste very soon, probably in about a month. And it's a Goan specialty called Rayshard, and traditionally you'd use it, you'd put it in whole fish and bake it or fry it. You can put it in all kinds of seafood and really good for veggie curries. And I'm just doing a test kitchen, so I'm looking for 10 people based in Dunedin who are adventurous in the kitchen to get in touch with me, and I'll give them some of this Rayshard masala and just to see what they can come up with, how they want to use it, some recipes and things like that. So,
awesome.
That's what's happening
Yeah, that sounds really fun. How can people get involved?
Oh, probably just email is best, hello@tartansari.co.nz.
Cool.
And then just, yeah, send me an email and I'll pick 10 people. Yeah.
Awesome. I was going to say, I guess, how long have you been holding the Tartan Sari reins in Dunedin for?
I think it's coming up 2 years. I've been at the market about a year and a half now. So, yeah, coming up, I think, about 2 years in November. So, yeah, it seems to be going pretty well.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Mm. It's pretty legit. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and speaking to us, Danielle.
Yeah, pleasure.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. All right, that was Danielle Cummings from the Otago Farmers Market stall, Tartan Sari. They serve a variety of curried and pickly goods. It's currently 11:54 on the Ramire Awa News Program. Coming up next on the track list, we have... What do we have, Amiria?
Oh, a little bit of Dateline. This is Love Hurts, their live version, but they've just released today a studio recording of it, so you can check that out as
Very
well.
Very cool. All right, Dateline here on the Awa News. Take care. Cool. Kia ora koutou. That was Dateline with Love Hurts. That is H-E-R-T-Z, not H-U-R-T-S. It's a pretty fun play on words, isn't it?
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, you're listening to the R1 News on Ramere, Te Rima or Here Turikoka. Always get that confused. It's currently 11:58 here, and we're just wrapping up the program, aren't we, Amiria?
Yeah, it's been a busy show today, hasn't it?
It's been a pretty chonker show, yeah. Pretty chock-a-block with a lot of different stuff. We had Dave Borry with some classic news and weather bulletins at the very start of the program.
Shout out
Dave Borry.
Great to start the program. And then we had business as usual, as we usually do, with Trent Smith. Where we looked at global recessions or the possibility of that, looking at the United States economy and what's going on out there and how it might impact us here.
Yes, as well as analysing inflation and what causes it and how to tackle with it. And the revelation that the Reserve Bank actually wants unemployment, I thought, was quite unsettling.
Yeah.
After that, we had a little interview with Paul, Associate Professor Brian Roper from the University of Otago's Department of Politics, about the Otago Politics Day School, which is taking place next Wednesday in the Hutton Theatre from about 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. It's an all-day affair with a variety of topics on all things, you know, climate change and looking at gender and identity and looking at public policy and international relations. It's a very big full-on thing. Affair. Yeah.
After that. Yeah, that does sound interesting.
Yeah.
And then we heard from Professor Louise Signal, head of the Department of Public Health at the University of Otago, Wellington, about a new piece of research which has just come out today showing the reality of lives for children in poverty from their own perspective. It was with a bunch of 12-year-olds who had cameras that would take photos of what their life was actually like. Yeah. So you could see it, not just hear about it from adults.
It was documented today. Then after that, we had Off to Market with Danielle. Off to Market with Danielle Cumming from Tartan Sari. It's a fantastic little vendor, stall from the Otago Farmers Market, where Danielle makes all sorts of go on goods like pickled goods and curry paste and whatnot.
Yeah, it sounds really tasty.
Yeah, and she also has a student discount.
Yes, a student discount. So if you are at the market tomorrow and you want something to spice up your kitchen.
Get some paste, get some pickled goods.
It's delicious. Great.
I'm really curious about that tomato pickle she was talking about.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Delicious. Anyway, this has been the R1 News.
Indeed. It's been a big day, but for Friday, the 5th of August. And as you can hear news every weekday from 11 to 12 here on Radio 1, 91 FM.
Yeah, take care, have a good weekend, you know, it's that weird time of the semester. Just got to keep pushing through and keep listening to the news.
Yes. Keeping up to date.
Keep it locked, gang.
You've been tuned in to the R1 News, weekdays from 11 to 12 here on Radio 1 91 FM. Te reo irirangi kotahi. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram.
Thank you for listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. There's heaps more at r1.co.nz.